Of the Pack Podcast. Eddie Lacy, Mike Daniels, Gilbert Brown, Don Barclay, Micah Hyde, your Green Bay Packers, yesterday's legends and today's superstars. From corporate or nonprofit events to private parties, add some spice, hire a Packers player from Mayfield Sports Marketing. For details, just go to PackersTalk.com and click on Player Appearances.
Are you looking for some signed Packer memorabilia?
Look no further than Waukesha Sports Cards.
If a Green Bay Packer can sign it, Waukesha Sports Cards has it.
Check our website for upcoming Packer player and legend signing.
Go to WaukeshaSportsCards.com.
Well, hello everyone and welcome back to Pulse of the Pack. In the words of Marshall Mathers, people, it feels so good to be back. I am your host, Jacob Westendorf. I have enjoyed a weekend of great weather, finally in the 80s, sunny, beautiful, and a weekend full of baseball. I am dog tired, but I'm going to gut it out for you guys for the next hour. Also with me is Jason Perrone, who had his first father-son baseball game yesterday at Target Field. Jason, how you doing?
Doing awesome. Weather has been great. And, yes, got the fam out to the ballpark yesterday, watched the Twins come back, get a victory. Those are in short supply this year, so that was pretty exciting. He's been to one other game in Arizona, but he was too young to remember. This was kind of the first official where he understood what was going on, and now I can't get him to put the wiffle ball and bat that he got as a giveaway at the game down for anything to save our lives. But that is the joys of being a father. And the other nice thing about this warm weather, Jacob, is it means that we've moved into officially kind of like the spring summer season, which also means we're that much closer to Packers football again.
We are that much closer to Packers football. And let me say, as a baseball coach, it brings my heart joy to find out that the young man will not put down his wiffle ball or bat that he got at the game. Now, Jason, I only have one request, is to make him throw left-handed. So if you can do that for me, that'd be fantastic.
You know what's funny, Jacob? I actually tried to do the left-handed thing today, and it was an utter failure. We got a lot of work to do. I'm definitely dealing with the righty, I'm sorry to say.
All right, well, we'll just start him with a simple drill then. It's ready, break, throw. And I will give you the logistics on that when we sign off today. Those of you guys that are listening, I'm sure you're aware the Western Conference Finals, the Golden State Warriors and Oklahoma City Thunder are playing. That is must-see TV, but we are must-listen radio, so I suggest that you do what I am doing. Put it on mute, listen to us, take in some information that we got for you. And the first bit I want to start, there's some news. We have a guest tonight. You guys may remember before the draft, Dan Shanka from Our Lads joined us, gave us a lot of good information about some potential prospects Packers could look to take. He will be back to discuss the Packers draft class with us. I got to tell you, Jason, the closer that we get to the season, the more, maybe it's fan optimism, maybe it's excitement, I'm not sure, but more excitement I'm getting for some of these players, and I think contributions they can make this year.
Yeah, I would agree. We obviously, with the dog days of the offseason, see a lot of analysis on what these guys might be able to do, contribute to the Packers team. I know that you've written about it some over at Today's Pigskin, along with your team. Cheesehead TV and my crew over there have done the same. We're obviously podcasting about it and talking about it ad nauseum because there's really nothing else to talk about. But legitimately, the more I look at the film and read about these guys, and now that they've kind of been through a rookie orientation and a mini camp, and mini camps are coming up again, they're going to be integrated with the rest of the veterans. We'll get a better sense of how some of these guys are starting to look. Obviously, they're not in pads, they're not playing in real games yet, but going to be exciting to have Dan back on the show, though, because, you know, he's got a great track record. He called the Kenny Clark pick, and he's obviously knows what he's talking about. So it's going to be interesting to hear what his take is, not just on the draft class, but there was also a slew of undrafted free agents. And as we know, one or two of those guys are probably going to make the roster. So it'll be fun to listen to Dan kind of talk about that, too.
Yeah, one or two, if not more. Before we get Dan on then, Jason, feel free to stop me if he does get in here. But, you know, I want to talk about some news that came out since we were last with you guys, and it has been quite some time. But one bit of news that came out one last time, John Kuhn has been moved on from, reportedly. Those reports have been disputed, but the Packers have yet to bring him back. Basically, you know, what I want to know is how we feel about it. Me, personally, I've talked about it before. I think the Packers made the right decision. I know Kuhn has definitely still got some value as a fullback, but with the way the team is set with the skill positions, wide receiver notably, it really doesn't make a whole lot of sense to carry two fullbacks. They drafted Aaron Ripkowski in the fifth round. I really think that he can be a special teams, and I think he can bring some of the offense that Kuhn did. He won't have the knowledge of the offense that Kuhn had, because Aaron Rodgers has said before that Kuhn may know the offense just as much or maybe even better than he does. I think that that is the right move by the Pack. I don't see the point of keeping two fullbacks. I don't know what the point would be of bringing him to camp just to cut him. And I don't think cutting a fifth-round pick in his second season when he's still got some juice left like Ripkowski does, and it looked like he can pack a punch, I don't think it makes much sense to cut him. Jason, what are your thoughts on the former Green Bay Packers folk hero? It appears that either Jason is on mute or he has gone to get Dan Shanka on the show. So I will continue to babble. The other bit of news that we have, of course, was about Mike Neal. There was a story that came out in the Milwaukee Journal. Michael Cohen over there did an excellent job on that story. It was a one-on-one interview with Mike Neal asking him kind of how his offseason has gone. And basically, Mike Neal said some really candid things that, you know, the Packers, he kind of had that tweet after the draft about how he's 100% right that the team has moved on from him. He said it was meant to be sarcastic, but you know, Mike Neal's been sensitive on Twitter before, to put it mildly. Mike Neal has also said that the Packers never offered him a new contract, which I thought was a little surprising. I thought maybe they'd put a feeler out there, but it's very clear that they viewed Nick Perry as a priority over Mike Neal. I think all of us on the show, Jason and I, both felt that way. With that in mind, I wrote a story recently for Pigskin about, you know, I don't think Mike Neal is a great player, but I still think that as of May 22nd that he's not signed is a little crazy, simply because Mike Neal is not a great player. You know, I've said that before. But I do think that he can bring some value as a backup pass rusher to a team. And when Jason comes back, we'll go a little more in-depth about Mike Neal. But I think that, you know, the Packers have made the right decision to move on, but I still think that a team that needs a second group pass rusher, you can do a hell of a lot worse than Mike Neal. I heard a little bit of background chatter. Jason, are you back?
I am back. Dan, I still have not gotten Dan on the line yet, so it is just me. I heard Mike Neal, and I wasn't listening to everything that was said, but I will say that Neal's kind of an interesting case because with everything that he contributed to the Packers since he was drafted in 2010, you would have thought that by now, and I think you mentioned it, Jacob, he would be signed. Somebody would have brought him in. He might be one of those guys who is almost like, and I'd be careful with this comparison, obviously, because their values and their contributions have been completely different throughout their career. But James Jones comes to mind as a guy who, and, you know, your previous co-host Marcus Eversall said on a couple of occasions, James Jones is more valuable to the Packers than he is to most other teams because of the fit that he brings to the offense and within the offense. And maybe Mike Neal and other coaches and other teams know this. Maybe his value is really specific to Green Bay and the way they use him in their defense, and other teams are questioning whether or not he's going to be as effective with their squads. Now, as far as I know, he hasn't signed with anybody yet, and I guess the talk about the Detroit Lions being interested, I don't know if there's still any legs to that rumor, but it is interesting to me that he's still kind of out on the street there, and by all accounts and everything that he has said so far, it does not sound like a return to Green Bay is in the cards at all.
No, it doesn't. Something I mentioned, Jason, was in that story that, the Packers never even offered him a contract. So that means, the Packers feel the same way about the Neil Perry thing that we did, and that was that Nick Perry was the priority, and that Mike Neal was kind of on the back burner, so to speak. If Nick Perry had signed elsewhere, I think you see Mike Neal back in Green Bay. But, it's kind of clear that the Packers want to give some snaps to, one guy that I keep, Aaron Nagler of Cheesehead TV, has posted a lot of stuff recently video-wise. He watches a lot of film, something I really admire about his work. But he's posted some stuff about Dayton Jones. And Dayton Jones, a lot of people are forgetting he's an outside linebacker now. And the Packers need to get him some snaps. And that means that the Packers need to get – Mike Neal had the most snaps at outside linebacker as a linebacker last year for a guy not named Clay Matthews. That's a lot of snaps they have to replace. I think the plan is to replace those snaps with some Dayton Jones, some Jayrone Elliott, and some Kyler Fackrell. Jason, what do you think the plans are going to be here in Green Bay at the outside linebacker spot now that, assuming they have to replace those almost, 800 snaps or so that Neal played last year?
So you've got a committee of guys that can kind of pick up the slack here. Peppers is going to do his thing on the outside. Dayton's going to move outside a little bit. Fackrell is going to probably get a little trial by fire, or he's going to, he's going to get thrown into the fire, I should say, as a rookie. He's going to probably get more opportunity than you would normally see a third rounder get, especially in a Mike McCarthy and a Dom Capers run system where they tend to kind of bring these guys along more slowly. It's not a quick process with certain rookies. Maybe first rounders are a different story, but I mean, even back in 2014, it took HaHa Clinton Dix how many weeks to get on the field, and he was probably ready from day one, and he's turned into a very good player. So now you're talking about Fackrell, who's a third rounder. I don't know how many snaps he's going to get, but if they're going to get Clay out, back outside, then I guess, that's going to probably limit his ability to get on the field there too. If Clay is going back outside, then you're not really worried about replacing Mike Neal's snaps, because not only are you replacing him, you're replacing him with a much better player. So I think they'll be okay. They've got enough guys now that they can make some noise. One guy who I think, and he's not a linebacker, but one guy who's going to be kind of a big part of that equation is Dean Lowry on the defensive line. If he can step in and contribute as a rookie and become part of the regular rotation, then you've got more of the machine becomes a little more well-oiled, and you can put guys in their natural positions and do what they do best and do what they need to do to contribute to the defense. So, I mean, as far as replacing that number of snaps, that's a big number, 800-some snaps. That's not anything quick and easy to do. But, again, if you look at Neal's numbers, they weren't ever stellar. I think he was your, consummate role player within the defense. He was never a huge factor. We're definitely not talking about a Desmond Bishop type of impact player. Definitely not, obviously, on the level of Clay Matthews, because very few guys are. I think they'll find a way to get it done with the guys that they have. But that defensive line is going to be a big part of the equation. And, I say that assuming Kenny Clark is obviously going to be a huge part of the rotation, but he's a first rounder, so he should be. That's the expectation of a first rounder. But I say if Lowry can, he's kind of an X factor there. If he becomes a big part of that defensive line rotation, then you've got everybody playing in their natural positions. And I think that's where this defense is going to excel this next year. Because remember, last year the defense was good. They were actually one of the better units in the league. They improved quite a bit, which is good to see, because if you look at the numbers on Dom Capers and his units, they don't typically tend to move up. They go up, the first couple of years, which they did. He started in 2009. They won a championship in 2010. They had a huge regression in 2011, and they never quite got back to that elite level.
like they were at the end of the 2010 season, but they're starting to creep back into that kind of category. They're far from elite now, but they can be. And that's obviously that pass rush is going to be a huge, huge key. And that was what Neil provided. And I think not only that, but it sounds like Fackrell's really good in run support as well. So could be kind of a double win there. If they can get some more production on getting to the passer and then also shut down some running games, that takes a lot of heat off the rest of the defense.
Yeah, and that's something, you know, that I'm getting a little excited about is, you know, I've watched some of the limited time that Dayton Jones has had on the edge, and he's performed pretty well there. And, you know, next year he's going to be a little more prototypical in terms of his weight. They'll train him full-time as an outside linebacker. I think that he's going to get an opportunity to really make some noise here and become Julius Tepper's successor. And, you know, that's something the Packers have been looking for really since they've signed Peppers, because, you know, even when they signed Peppers, they knew that he only had so much time left. You know, he's an older fella. He's, you know, he doesn't have a ton of time left as a elite NFL player, and I really do think next year the Packers need to find a way to, you know, limit Julius Peppers' snaps. And the way to do that is, you know, the guys I'm mentioning, Nick Perry, Dayton Jones, Jay Elliott, Kyler Fackrell, guys like that need to do enough to stay on the field in the first round, or I'm sorry, not in the first round. They need to do enough to stay on the field so Julius Peppers can get some rest and be a little more impactful. The other thing you mentioned was, you know, the defensive line and how that plays a part as well. The Packers, I know Kenny Clark is young, 20 years old, and we're going to preach patience and stuff, but the Packers really do need Kenny Clark to have a year, you know, similar or better than a year. And I know Raji gets a lot of flack, but B.J. Raji was actually pretty good last season. And they really do need Mike Daniels to be his normal self, which is a great player. They need LaTroy Guyon to be the player that he's been since he's been in Green Bay. And Dean Lowry's another guy you mentioned as well. I think he'll have a chance to be the Packers' five tech. The Packers have some – they've never had a guy with the body size of Dean Lowry to play that position, and I really do think that's what they drafted him for, is to be their five-tech player. And beyond that, you've got some guys behind waiting in the wings. Christian Ringo is one. He's a practice squad guy most of last year. They gave him a bit of a bonus to keep him on the practice squad when he had a chance to sign elsewhere. And you've got other guys, you know, undrafted free agents. Mike Pennell is a player that he'll be sitting the first 4 weeks because of a failed drug test. But when he comes back, he's been a solid contributor along that defensive line. And, you know, he's a talented big man. And the Packers can always use more talented big men. And that's, you know, that's something I can say for every single team. Really, I think what that defensive line can do is make things easier on the inside linebackers. You know, the inside linebacker play for the Packers has not been good. And I think that every fan ever has pretty much pointed that out by now. But, you know, something else that can be said is, like the Denver Broncos, for example, Danny Trevathan and Brandon Marshall, I think are both good players. But up front, last year, the Broncos had guys like Malik Jackson and Derek Wolfe to make some plays and kind of keep guys off of them. Now, I'm not going to suggest that Sam Barrington or Blake Martinez or Jake Ryan can be similar in impact to the way that the guys I just mentioned are, but maybe their job can be made a little bit easier if blockers aren't so easily getting to the second level. You know, the defensive line, I think, is going to be a big part of what the Packers do. And you really saw last year, back to the defensive line, their front seven, well, really their front four specifically, played very well in the playoffs. And they're, you know, they were able to make the Arizona Cardinals one-dimensional. They were able to do some similar stuff to the Washington Redskins at some point. Raji, Guyon, Daniels, et cetera, made a lot of plays in the playoffs for other guys, and that's something the Packers need. They need to be able to play on the other side of the line of scrimmage, and I think that's something that that'll be one of the first things I'm watching is can, you know, Lowry and Kenny Clark and guys like that, can they make enough plays to really help some of the other guys around? Because, you know, when you play the Packers and their defense, you know that Clay Matthews is going to be game plan for. You know, he's going to rush the passer. You know, Julius Peppers is going to get after the quarterback. You know, Mike Daniels is very good. You know, their secondary is young and promising. Ha-ha Clinton Dix is a player that I think is ready to break out. There was somebody who tweeted, it's been a while since I've seen it, and I wanted to bring it up on the show, but it was a guy who watches a lot of film, and he said that, you know, Clinton Dix really was just a couple splash plays away last year from being in the Defensive Player of the Year conversation. That's the type of player that Ha-Ha Clinton Dix is. And I really do think he's going to have a big year next year. I think that he's a player that Packers got exactly what they needed and everything they could have possibly asked for when they drafted him. So that's my, you know, kind of pick for a breakout player next year. If you didn't, if you don't think he broke out last year, I think this is the year that Ha-Ha Clinton Dix, who wears number 21, brings back some memories of the guy that played in Green Bay that used to wear number 21. Jason, what's your feeling on really the Packers defensive unit as a whole? Okay, bear with us. We are trying to get Dan Shanka on the phone as we speak. So Jason is kind of popping in and out here, getting guy or trying to get him on the phone. We're having some issues with getting a hold of him, but we are still hoping to get Dan Shanka on the show and to discuss the Packers draft class. Something else I want to talk to you then, since while I got the floor to myself, is the offensive side of the ball, and that's something where, I mean, I really have been saying this for a while. I think the reports of the demise of the Packers offense has been exaggerated, but I am done talking about that because we now have and are pleased to welcome our lads, Dan Shanka. Dan, welcome back. Can you hear me?
Yeah, thank you very much. I don't know. We had some technical difficulties there for a while and where we couldn't make a connection, but now we're good. So I'm ready to roll whenever you guys are.
Ready to roll. As my father once told me, technology is a fickle expletive. So that appears to be the situation we have come in. Dan, the last time you were here, we talked a lot about the draft, and it was really about potential prospects. And something now that we can discuss instead of hypotheticals is who the Packers actually picked. So everybody's going to want to know about the first-round pick. So that is the question I want to ask is, you know, the Packers were on the clock at 27, and it was almost like if you had asked me before that draft started, any player that I could have wanted for the Packers was pretty much on the board there, and that includes the surprise fall of Miles Jack. So Kenny Clark was the selection, but there were other options, Vernon Butler, Miles Jack, Andrew Billings, who slipped. He was thought highly by some, ended up slipping all the way to the fourth round. Reggie Ragland from Alabama was there. So my question is, at the spot, you called the Kenny Clark pick. Of the guys that were on the board, is that who you would have selected?
I tell you what, yes. And I'll tell you why, like, Billings slipped and why a guy like Kenny Clark was so valued there in that first round, early second round area was his versatility. You know, like Billings, for instance, he's kind of a one-dimensional, two-gap guy, nose tackle. Whereas here, a guy like Kenny Clark, he not only plays nose tackle, but he can play, and anymore, you got to be so versatile. And because, you know, people can say, hey, the Packers are a 3-4 team, but you know, you guys know, and the Packer fans know, that it's a multiple front package where, hey, you're going to line up in a four-man front with rushers and things like that, and you're going to line up a guy like Kenny Clark. He could be a nose tackle in a pressure package, like a 3-4 scheme where, you know, you're going to nickel, you know, have your nickel packages in, or he can be, you know, he could play a defensive end in the 4-3 scheme, or he can play a defensive tackle in a 4-3 scheme. He can play the under tackle, you know, a 3 technique. He can play a 3 tech or 5 technique in the 3-man front. So I think that his versatility and his productivity, now, one thing that Packer fans want to keep in mind, this guy's a super productive football player. I mean, he wasn't, you know, everybody's talking about Nemechi, for instance, from Mississippi. Well, here's a guy who's got 29 tackles. Now, you look at Kenny Clark, he put 75 tackles on with 11 tackles for loss and 6 sacks and stuff. So you're talking about a guy that's extremely explosive, a guy that can play any place across the defensive front, and is a very athletic guy.
All right, Dan, it's Jason. Thanks again for coming on. So it sounds like you definitely endorse the pick of
yep.
Kenny Clark. And we kind of got a little bit of an idea day of that the Packers' love for Clark was picking up. So no surprise to see them pick him there, but there was a lot of chatter. And I know you're on social media too, but you had to have enjoyed all of these fans going absolutely bananas watching Miles Jack fall out of the top five and everybody wanting to pick him up. And of course he landed in Jacksonville where he was kind of mocked to go in the first place. So it'll be interesting to see what happens there, but I want to skip a couple picks and go to Blake Martinez, the linebacker out of Stanford. He, you know, he had a high grade in coverage coming out. He was touted as one of the best linebackers in coverage out there. So this has been an area of weakness for the Packers linebackers. Did you see the same thing with Martinez as far as his pass coverage skills? And then how do you see that translating to the pros? Obviously the college and the pro games are completely different.
Right. Well, see, that the thing is, again, being versatile and having a good natural feel for coverage. You know, the thing is Martinez is real good. And of course, playing in the somewhat similar scheme at Stanford, the way they use the overs and unders and the 3-4 and the 4-3s and all that. But, you know, he just has, plus being very well coached, I mean, he's a very reactive guy. And here's somebody that he's got just natural awareness where he's got his head on the swivel when he's looking for receivers coming outside, coming in, receivers going down the seam. He's just a real smart guy and very instinctive in regards to coverage. And, you know, he just has to continue to get better because, like you said, there's going to be some differences because there's so many different coverage packages in the NFL. But the thing is, one thing about the Stanford guys, they're quick to pick up things, and they're not only very smart in the classroom, but they're, you know, a lot of those linebackers are very instinctive on the football field, and they play with a great technique, too.
Dan, the Packers did something in the second round that they almost never do. Ted Thompson traded up for a guy. It was kind of a story that was a little funny for fans' case because they moved right in front of the Bears and took Jason Spriggs out of Indiana. The question I have is, you know, initially, what was your assessment of moving up? They gave up one of their fourths and a seventh to move up and grab Spriggs. What's your assessment of the trade and then the pick itself?
I think that here was a guy that had some first-round grades on him by a lot of different teams, and actually Spriggs was kind of the last of that top group of Stanley and Tunsil and Conklin and Decker. That group, and then you can throw Spriggs in there because Spriggs is a terrific athlete. And I think Ted probably wanted to make sure they got a guy that could be a swing tackle and maybe eventually move into the starting spot. And he's versatile enough. This is a 4-for-1 offensive lineman, and you kind of, you know, you look at that theme at Green Bay and really around the National Football League. You want a guy that can play a lot of different positions just because of the injury situations that, you know, go on in teams. But you know, Spriggs was our fifth-rated offensive tackle, and we grade the guys athletically, and analytically at the combine, you know, and he was our highest-rated out of the 47 offensive linemen that worked out. He was number one. So, you know, we have to certainly endorse that pick at, you know, in the second round, the 48th pick for the Packers.
Something else that was reported by Tony Pauline before the draft was that the Packers were looking for a left tackle upgrade and they wanted David Bakhtiari to move inside to guard. I'm certainly not a scout, but that seems to baffle me. I don't know. I know Bakhtiari was a center prospect to some when he came out of Colorado, but Bakhtiari's game really is a really good pass protector and kind of a below-average run blocker. The Packers obviously have four offensive linemen that are slated to be free agents. So, you know, my first thought was just that the Packers were giving themselves some negotiating leverage over Bakhtiari. If they happen to bring back Bakhtiari, then Spriggs is your swing tackle. on maybe an eventual replacement for Brian Bulaga if his body continues to betray him the way that it has in years past. But with all that said, the question I have is there any sense, leg, does it make sense to you at all for the Packers to move Bakhtiari inside to guard? And the other thing is, why would Bakhtiari do that? Because he's probably giving up a decent amount of money. Left tackles get paid far more handsomely than guards.
Well, you know, really, I tell you, Bakhtiari played outstanding, and I don't think anybody would have ever predicted, you know, he would come in and start as a rookie at left tackle and do as well as he did. I mean, and like you said, his shortcomings in the running game a little bit and everything, but hey, with Josh Sitton and Lang, you know, inside their guard, you know, the contract situations, and they're not getting any younger. I mean, Sitton what came out in 08 and Lang 09, so, you know, a little age and wear getting on those guys. I don't know. You know, here's the thing. I think they might battle it out, Spriggs and Bakhtiari, and then the guy that doesn't win that left tackle spot, you know, in a year from now, may go ahead and go inside. So it may be Spriggs too, but Spriggs is a terrific athlete. And hey, you know, keep in mind, guys, the number one thing you want these guys to do anymore is pass protect. And you know, you love, you know, getting your good fit and fire fit and follow through and drive the guy off the ball. But you got to be a pass protector, and Bakhtiari, that's, you know, what he does really well. And Spriggs is really a good pass protector too. So I think that I don't know, you know, hey, Bakhtiari is going to go, you know, if he's going to go inside or assigned inside, then that's where he's going to go. And then Spriggs would be the tackle there. But I could see a battle there between those two guys, and whoever wins it, then the other guy will go inside and, you know, inside at guard if, you know, Sitton and Lang aren't re-signed.
Yeah, that's going to be an area where there's going to be a lot of eyes on in training camp. And, you know, competition is good for everybody, you know, as long as nobody's head gets completely screwed off because they're upset that they have to compete for their job. But these guys are all pros, and they should be prepared for that, and they should be willing to do that. I know that Bakhtiari's been asked about it before, and his response has been from day one that he's a tackle and that's it. So it's going to be interesting to see what goes down there. And then, you know, I wanted to ask you, not Packers related, but I know that on the few times we've had you on the show before, you've told us some stories about some prospects whose draft days and draft experiences or their draft positions have completely unraveled because of either something that they did or something that was out of their control. Laramie Tunsil's situation was kind of unfortunate on draft day because it was not something that he necessarily did. I guess he did participate in the video, but that video was launched of him. Obviously it was kind of a malicious thing by someone that, you know, we know the story now that someone that was close to him, and it was unfortunate for him. But did that jog up any memories of, or did that remind you of anything in the past where, and you know, social media hasn't been around for that too incredibly long, but anybody else that you maybe scouted or that you had high on a board for a team, and then something just completely fell off the wheels the day of the draft and you saw their stock plummet, or you had to kind of scramble to move them down the board?
No, because usually you have your homework. And to be honest with you, you know, I think, first of all, Tunsil was a media aberration. I mean, you know, people, the YouTube people and all that, because, you know, prior to the draft, about 3 weeks before the draft, I talked to five different offensive line coaches, and not one of them had Tunsil as their top tackle. Okay, and he's got ankle problems, got knee problems, got injury problems, he has finish problems, you know, he's got the off-field stuff, and the only thing that, you know, the gas mask or the pot mask or whatever you want to call that did is, you know, confirm suspicions about the guy that people already knew about. And, you know, the thing is, you have to, you know, kind of separate the media baloney with what the teams really knew, and the teams knew about Tunsil, okay? Now, some don't care, you know, and they would draft him or what have you, but all that did, when that came out, it was suspicions confirmed. But, you know, so I'm not going to say that he just slid down the elevator shaft just because of that. And, you know, I think that he could have gone maybe at 10, possibly. I don't know if the Giants would have taken him or not because of injury situations and off-field that they knew about. But, you know, I just I'm kind of in another camp on guys like that. I personally wouldn't have taken the guy. So, I mean, I don't want guys like that on my team because I can't trust them. And, you know, when you're talking about bringing a guy in that's injury-prone, you can't trust, and he played 20-some games in his college career, I don't want a guy like that on my team. So, you know, people can have him, and then if he's a great player and keeps his nose clean and all that, I'd consider him on a second contract, but I wouldn't want a guy like that on my team.
Sure, and I know you've kind of maintained that stance over the past. I just thought it was interesting and wondered if there were any other examples that were like it, but it was certainly a unique situation, and then it just shows some of the downfalls of social media.
It was.
But, you know, yeah, a blessing and a curse, I guess, and especially Twitter with the you know, quick responses and comments that can get put out there. But in kind of getting back to the Packers, they drafted Trevor Davis, the wide receiver out of Cal. Now, obviously, he has a ton of speed. He reminds me of the type of guy that Al Davis would just be licking his chops and salivating over sitting in the front row at the combine. You know, had that blazing speed, and he played with Jared Goff at Cal, so he played with a top college quarterback. So, but his size is a bit of a question mark. That's one of the things that the Wisconsin media has remarked about since he attended the rookie mini camp. And so, you know, there's questions: can he take a hit over the middle? You know, is he pro ready? Do you think that he's a pro receiver right now, or is there some work to be done on Davis?
No, there's definite work to be done, and you know, the thing at Cal, they played like five different receivers that played quite a bit, and so he didn't put up great numbers. We had a wide receiver when I was at Philadelphia that we ended up drafting, Pinckney out of Southern Miss, and we called him the traveling javelin, you know, because he was so slender. And I tell you what, it's a detriment when you're real slender. Now he was in the 175-pound range, so obviously Davis is a little bit bigger than that. But, you know, he's got a frame where he can put some extra weight on. But no, you know, you'd like a guy like Nelson going over the middle that's bigger and stronger and things like that. But there's always a place for a speed guy like that. Now, you know, you can send him deep, and I'll guarantee you, even if he didn't have any arms, he'd be covered, okay? Or he had his arms tied to his side, you know, but he's going to be covered because he can fly, and then, you know, guys like Nelson come underneath and make plays. So, you know, there's value when you got speed like that. And, you know, I think the Packers wanted to get a guy that could stretch the secondary so, you know, Rodgers can work underneath in the medium right. And then, hey, if he wants to launch it deep, he can, you know, throw it to his old Cal alumni there, and this guy can take the top off secondary now. I mean, he's got big-time speed, but he's got a lot to learn. You know, being in that bear raid offense, you always got a lot of NFL nuances to you know, receiver play you got to learn before you get on the field, and there's a lot of complexity to the offense at Green Bay, and it takes a guy – a while to get on the field, you know, receiver to learn that. So, and once they do, though, I think Davis will be fine. He'll fill out a little bit. He's got pretty good hands, and he can fly. And you know, you don't always have to send those guys over the middle. They can run crossing patterns and things like that. Man coverage. They don't necessarily always have to in zone coverage run a big route and maybe be able to take a hit and things like that. It's, you know, how you want to use the guy.
Dan, one pick that had me excited was, for other reasons, Dean Lowry, is from the same town as I am. So I've seen this kid play since he was in high school. There was definitely a theme for the Packers draft class, and that's that their players were big. And Lowry has a body type that the Packers haven't really had along their defensive line, really since Dom Capers took the job over in 2009. He's kind of a sleeper in the draft class. He's very athletic. He gets kind of some of the old labels of gym rat, gritty, all that kind of stuff. But he really is an athlete, strong kid, has short arms. which is seen as a detriment by some. But what was your assessment of Lowry coming out of the draft?
Well, you're singing to the choir because he was a guy that you guys may or may not know that I'm on the three-man selection committee for the East-West, and he was one of the guys I really wanted to get in our game. And because of a high motor, I mean, this is the kind of guys I love. I don't like talking about wasting my breath on tonsils. I like talking about guys like Dean Lowry, guys that give it to you every single down. You're never going to have to worry about him. High motor, great effort, every from snap to whistle. Here's a guy that plays hard. And, you know, that the only, you know, downside, I guess you'd say, is, you know, his arm length. Obviously, you like those guys that are 34, 33-and-a-half arm lengths and things like that. His are 31. But, hey, he's strong. He's powerful. He's explosive off the edge. You saw his 10 time. He ran a 1.69, which is excellent. And but he's a relentless player. And, you know, he blocks kicks. So the thing is, he's just going to have to work more and take advantage of everything he's got. And don't worry too much about those short arms. What he can do, I mean, he can stuff the run right there too. You know, the arms, the long arms help your pass rush. But, you know, when you're in the run game, I mean, he can lock people up, his hands inside there, and lock the guy and stack him and then shed quickly, explode off him and make the tackle. And, yeah, we saw him, and you're right. I mean, hey, here's this guy's a very athletic guy. He ran 4.83 at the combine. You know, he's almost 6'6", about 300 pounds. And, you know, this is the kind of guy I'd love to have on my team because, you know, he finishes the plays, and you see his pursuit. You know, we actually graded him when he was a junior and his senior year, so we got, you know, a lot of tape on this guy. And so we thought that he could play, you know, 4-3 run stuffing defensive end or a 3-4-5 technique. And, yeah, again, the Packer theme being versatile, I think you see a guy like Lowry that you can count on. And, hey, there's a lot to be said for these guys that are not only smart and strong, but, hey, when you leave the field, you sleep well at night when you got guys like Dean Lowry on your football team.
Well, as somebody who lives in the same city that Lowry grew up in, we are in desperate need of some positive news to come from this community. So it's good to hear that Lowry could definitely bring a positive light on this city. Dan, the other player that the Packers took just before Lowry in the third round, actually, so I'm going back around, but was Kyler Fackrell. He's an older guy for a rookie. You know, the question is the Packers have some turnover this year at outside linebacker. Mike Neal, we were talking about before he came on, he played a lot of snaps last year. It sounds like it's incredibly unlikely, barring a catastrophic injury here in OTAs, that Mike Neal will be back in Green Bay. So they're replacing his snaps. Some of that will be with Dayton Jones. Jay Elliott is one, and I imagine they took this guy in the third round. This is a guy that they're going to have be on the field. You know, is that enough right now to give production to the Packers pass rush in 2016? And were you a little surprised that he was a third-round pick?
No, because I tell you what, now, you know, he was injured as a junior, so he sat out whole year, but he had tremendous sophomore year, and the guy was always very productive. And, again, I think he fits that theme that Green Bay is putting together. He's a versatile guy. You know, he could be a nickel pass rusher. He can be a guy that can play a Sam linebacker in a 4-3 type scheme. He can you know come off the edge in multiple sub packages. He can drop into coverage. I mean, you're talking about a guy now at 6'5", 245, runs well, runs before sixes, and you know, so, and he's been, and again, here's a thing that I really like about guys like Fackrell. I mean, he is productive every year that he was in college. I mean, every year, you know, except for that one year he was injured. I mean, he was highly productive. again, a high motor, great effort football player, and I think that that is kind of the theme that, you know, we're looking at. He's a guy that the thing that I worried a little bit about, but he showed in the Senior Bowl that he could do this really well, is it turned the corner and flattened down, and I thought he might be a little bit stiff, you know, to do that, because he kind of seems like he might be a little upright at times, but you know what? He could do that. He could turn the corner and flatten down, which, you know, that's always a concern when you have a pass rusher out there. But and then, again, in pass drops, here's a guy that's got really good awareness in zone coverage. He can run with a tight end in man coverage. So I think that, you know, obviously all these guys have things to learn on the pro level, but he's got all – and, again, another good, hard-working kid. You know, I mean, you could put him and Lowry and Spriggs, those guys, and put them all in the same type of thing. Kenny Clark, you know. So Kenny Clark had a tough background with his father and everything, you know, but here's a kid that stepped up to the plate and did a great job. So, you know, they're solid picks.
Talking with Dan Shonka of Our Lads NFL Scouting Service. Dan, you know, as you know, the Packers have had a lot of luck with the undrafted free agency pool in recent years, and so there's usually one or two guys that crack the roster every year. So I know that there's a ton of these guys that got picked up after the draft on all 32 teams, so I would be shocked, although maybe not totally shocked. You're kind of a walking encyclopedia, so – but wanted to ask about the Packers' slate of undrafted free agents, and I'm looking at a list of them here, and could go through a few of them if you need a refresher. But if not, I didn't know if you had a name right off the top of your head of those that the Packers picked up that you were surprised didn't get drafted or that you think could be that guy this year for the Packers.
Well, you know, Dromel Allison, for instance, from Illinois, you know, he we had him in the East West, and I'd studied him at Illinois. I watched that Big Ten real close because I'm about 20 miles north of the University of Iowa. So we always feel like we've got a pretty good handle on the Big Ten. And, you know, I think Geronimo Allison was a guy that his hands were a little bit inconsistent at times, but he had a real big week in the East West and caught a couple touchdowns there, and had a really – good week and good game, and had a really good senior year. So, you know, I think that was really a good free agent pickup. And another receiver out of Miami, Herb Waters, can fly. And like Herb, I think that was a real good free agent pickup there. Two guys that, you know, have probably a shot to make the practice squad and things like that. Now, Geronimo's not afraid to go over the middle. You know, he's a good-sized guy. He's got some meat to him, and, you know, he can handle things like that. So I do like that pickup. I think that both those guys and I'm going to throw out another guy that a lot of people don't know about on the national. The teams do, but, you know, a lot of fans don't know about McKayton Dorlett from Northern Iowa. He's a little corner. I want to tell you something. This guy is scrappy. You know, I want to tell you, he is all over you. He can return punts, and but he is every time. You know, I watch Hall, the corner at Northern Iowa, which is, you know, just north of us, about 40 miles or so. And I've seen the guys play live a lot, and obviously I've seen him play. Oh, geez, I probably have seen no less than 15 tapes on these guys, because defensive backs, you got to look at a lot of tape anyway. But Dorlett he was always around those receivers. I mean, he was scrappy because they're throwing his way because Hall was on the other side. And I tell you what, that scrappy little guy would slap the ball away. He'd be on top of things. I could see him making a practice squad, and he's going to be a nickel corner. And he would be a perfect nickel corner covering those, smaller inside slot guys that are quick, you know, in and out of their breaks and things. But I like him. I think that, and then Brown, the linebacker, you know, out of Mississippi State, I think that, you know, he's a good, solid pickup. So Brian Price, a defensive tackle out of Texas San Antonio, I liked him. You know, Don Jackson has had his moments, a running back. You know, he had his moments in college, too. I think, you know, that's a good free agent pickup. So, you know, I don't want to leave anybody out. That, but I think, you know, that the Packers got some good free agent guys there. And to me, you know, that shows your scouting staff. You know, Reggie Gilbert, okay, here's another one. And Ann from Arizona, you know, he's got some talent. So, you know, there's some guys there that, you know, I think that have got talent, certainly will be battling for, you know, those 10 spots on the practice squad.
Yeah, and you mentioned a lot of the names that you mentioned are guys that have been thrown around kind of throughout the Packers universe. McKitten Dorlant is the cornerback out of Northern Iowa, I think, that you were talking about. He's certainly somebody that has gotten some discussion. You know, one guy I want to ask you about real quick, too, because there seems to be a lot of question marks about Tim Mastay and his up and down season that he had last year. Don't know how, you know, savvy on the punters, you know, versus some of the other skill players that you guys get. But Peter Mortel out of Minnesota and his chances to possibly unseat Mastay. I mean, obviously, not only as a kicker, but he's probably going to have to also assume the placeholding duties, and we don't want to kind of take that for granted.
Right. You know, I think that, you know, Peter Mortel did not have as great a year this year as he did as a junior. But, you know, sometimes the punters are like that. You know, they level off and things. But he's got a strong leg, and he'll compete. Whether he can beat him out, only time will tell on that, because there's some pretty good free agent rookie-type punters that didn't get drafted. And it's going to, you know, it's type of thing that if Peter can't do it, then there's probably a you know, somebody out there that's going to give Mastay some good competition. But, I think Mortel would be a guy that, you know, if he's in shape and comes in and can thump it a little bit, you know, like he did when he was a junior, you know, he'll certainly have a chance to compete.
No surprise, without any assistance at all, you rattled through all those undrafted free agents and some excellent nuggets on the Packers draft choices as well. Never a disappointing conversation, Dan. I think we've pretty much covered most of the draft, and we want to thank you again for coming on year after year and supporting the show. I know you had a lot of shows to go on, and a lot of people wanted your opinion, so it just speaks to the great work that you do. So definitely not going to, you know, continue to follow Dan on Twitter and the great insight that he and his team have for all these prospects. And on behalf of Jacob and I, thanks again for coming on. This was kind of a great recap and kind of tied up some of the questions that we had with regards to some of these players. So we really appreciate it.
You bet it. Bet you guys. Always great. Hey, I believe me, I got 32 favorite teams, but the Packers was always my team growing up and things like that. And saw Vince Lombardi bring his Packers into our, back then they used to play the games around the country, the preseason games. And back in like 1962 is when I saw the Packers live and things here. So it's always fun to see those Packers do well. So, but anyway, guys, hey, thanks for asking me. Always great being with you.
All right, thanks a lot, Dan.
That was Dan Shaka of Arlad's NFL Scouting Service. Dan is a great Twitter follower. You can follow him at Arlad's_Shaka. Gave us two really good shows of insight on the Packers draft. First for speculation, of course, and then obviously wrapping up the Packers picks and undrafted free agents. I thought I was a walking sports encyclopedia. That guy is insane. That was crazy. He went through the Packers undrafted free agent list as if it was a list of first-round picks. So that was great to hear. A lot of good insight there. And it was a good first show to be back. Packers have their first open OTA practice on Tuesday. So if any of you are in the Green Bay area and want to go watch the Packers practice on Tuesday, that is open to the public. So
let me know how that goes. Unfortunately, I am not able to travel up that way this year, but good first show back. Hopefully some of the kinks and bumps and bruises and all the stuff that happened are out of the way now, and we will have a strong summer before we get into football season, but that will do it for today's show. Be sure to check out PackersTalk.com for all your latest Packers news and podcasts. I want to thank our sponsors, Mark Mayfield and Waukesha Sports. A lot of cool stuff coming out of them. Check out their website for details on autographs, private signings, things of that nature. The Packers have, as I mentioned, their first OTA, so that's kind of our first taste of football season. It looks like their Twitter account is doing a better job of getting things out. So really follow the Packers Twitter account now. It's gotten much better in recent memory. You can follow our show on Twitter. We are at Packer Paul. So you can follow me. I am at Jacob Westendorf. You can follow Jason at Jason Perrone. Thank you guys for listening to our show. We'll try not to be away for as much time anymore, but thank you very much for listening to Pulse of the Pack.
Of the Pack Podcast.
Eddie Lacy, Mike Daniels, Gilbert Brown, Don Barclay, Micah Hyde, your Green Bay Packers, yesterday's legends and today's superstars. From corporate or nonprofit events to private parties, add some spice, hire a Packers player from Mayfield Sports Marketing. For details, just go to PackersTalk.com and click on Player Appearances.
Are you looking for some signed Packer memorabilia?
Look no further than Waukesha Sports Cards.
If a Green Bay Packer can sign it, Waukesha Sports Cards has it.
Check our website for upcoming Packer player and legend signings.
Go to WaukeshaSportsCards.com.